Dear listener, we hope that you've been enjoying the variety of podcasts that we have on our network. Now is your opportunity to help us by telling us a little more about you. Please visit jcastnetwork.org/survey and complete our listener survey so that we can learn more about you and your listening habits. Again, please visit jcastnetwork.org/survey. Thanks so much.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got a great show for you today. In this half hour of the show, we're going to be interviewing Wendy Rose Bice, who is the director of the Jewish Historical Society of Michigan, or Michigan Jewish Historical Society. They have an opening down at the Detroit Historical Museum down on Woodward and whatever this cross is over there. It's right by Wayne State, right across the street from Wayne. And the opening is like about Jews and baseball. Very cute. I mean, here we are at the end of, we're in the middle of September. People are still listening to baseball. At least some people are. So it's a good thing. The portion of the week is the portion of Ki Tetzé. Happens to be my bar mitzvah parsha, chapter 21:10 of the book of Deuteronomy. We've got a really poignant story at the end, suitable for before the high holiday season. Without any further ado, let's go right to the news. The Israeli Air Force launched airstrikes against Syria. The attacks were in response to rocket fire from Syria into the Golan Heights earlier in the day. No injuries were reported. The Russian Foreign Ministry reported that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas agreed to meet in Moscow to renew final status talks. No date has been set for a meeting between the two leaders. The United States is quite concerned about this, actually, as it might mean that the U.S., for the first time, takes a back seat in the peace process. The Palestinian High Court canceled municipal elections in the West Bank and Gaza scheduled for next month. Fights between Fatah and Hamas, the two factions of the Palestinians, over who can run for office led to the cancellations. The last time they had an election over there was 11 years ago when they elected Mahmoud Abbas to a four-year term. But he has to call the elections, and he hasn't called any elections. That's the thing's way. That's democracy over there. And finally, archaeologists working in Jerusalem restored floor tiling that was part of the courtyards of King Herod's Second Temple over 2,000 years ago. The project is part of the Temple Mount Sifting Project, which was founded in 2005 to recover archaeological artifacts that had been removed from the Temple Mount area by the Jerusalem Islamic Waqif, which managed the Muslim buildings at the site. And they were in the process of tearing down part of the mountain over there. And the Jews got permission to sift through the soil and came out with millions of artifacts dating back to Second and even First Temple time. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Why go anywhere else when you could go to One Stop Kosher? Located on Greenfield Road, just south of 696, you're never far from One Stop Kosher. At One Stop Kosher, you'll find the largest selection of kosher wines in Michigan. One Stop Kosher has the freshest produce, the best dairy, deli, and meats. They're gourmet. They even have a kosher bakery right on the premise. It's One Stop Kosher on Greenfield Road in 696 for all your shopping needs. Hey, Shulfeman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. The Jewish Historical Society of Michigan, in cooperation with the Detroit Historical Society, put together an exhibit down at their museum, the Detroit Museum, down on Woodward near Wayne. And we have online today Wendy Rose Bice, who is the organizer of the exhibit, that I believe the director of the Historical Society. How are you today, Wendy?
Good. How are you?
Good, thank God. So tell us about Jews and baseball, Wendy.
It is my pleasure. First, I'm with the Jewish Historical Society of Michigan, and we partnered with the Detroit Historical Society to bring the exhibit Chasing Dreams to Detroit. The exhibit originated in Philadelphia at the National Museum of American Jewish History in 2004 is what they call an artifact exhibit, which was, I think it was about 20,000 pieces that were in this exhibit. We've curated it down to a traveling size exhibit that includes a lot of local material and history about how baseball has been and continues to be a way for immigrant and minority communities to find and connect to their Americanism. So what Chasing Dreams, what's fascinating about this exhibit is it's about baseball, but it's about baseball as more than a summer pastime and more than a professional sport. And we use images and artifacts and stories, and we hope through those vehicles we're prompting visitors to consider what baseball means to Americans and how baseball unites us.
Okay, so what items were chosen on what basis? If you're talking starting with 20,000 different artifacts that were housed in the museum in Philadelphia, so what was the criteria then for selecting which would be like the absolute best things to show people in Detroit then, Wendy?
The National Museum exhibition traveled to about four different cities, and that exhibition is actually, I think, it's somewhere at this moment, but it is closing down, if not within days, you know, within a month or so. And all those artifacts are going back to their donors. We had actually tried to get that exhibit to Detroit for next year, but the donors to that exhibit wanted their pieces back. So the National Museum then said, let's make a traveling exhibit. And they created very large panels that are 12 feet wide and two-sided, and both sides have content on them, stories and images about different minority and ethnic communities and how they found baseball as this uniting force. What we did was we took two of those panels and collected stories from Michigan that reinforced that theme. So one panel is about the Jewish community. One panel is about other European communities. One panel is about African American, and the other is about Latinos. And they're all Michigan stories of varying types. In addition, we also then collected a small amount of artifacts, all from Michigan, all from the Detroit area, from a handful of collectors that continue, again, to show this theme. So there's baseball cards, there's a yarmulke, there's a uniform that was the Lowenstein family knew Hank Greenberg, and they were big fans two generations ago. So they had a pint-sized uniform made of a replica of Hank Greenberg's uniform. And the I believe the father of this present generation wore it, and then the adult now father of the current generation wore it, and his son wore it. So it's been through three generations that they've worn this miniature Hank Greenberg uniform. We also talk about women in baseball, and there was a lot of women's teams in the World War II era that played really almost professional ball, again, as a way to fill in that void because the men were overseas, so the women's leagues were really quite active. And we talk about the Negro Leagues, and we talk about how Latinos have been a more recent influence in the game of baseball and also in this concept of baseball as a way to find your Americanism.
Okay, now, so you're talking, it's very interesting and fascinating, actually, the angle from which you're approaching this. When I think of Jewish baseball players, as far back as my knowledge of Jewish baseball history goes, which basically I think the first Jewish person I know about was indeed Hank Greenberg. I heard about him even growing up in New York because he was such a great baseball player. But I associate immigrant sports more with things like boxing as far as what Jews were doing. There were Jewish heavyweight champions, and there were all kinds of champions, and there were all kinds of Jewish boxers. And I don't associate it necessarily with it. And I'm thinking now, even the story of Hank Greenberg and, say, like Brad Ausmus, who both played for the Tigers, are both Jewish, doesn't seem to me to be presenting any type of a story of a nation or a people that are trying to work themselves up out of the immigrant status and the acceptable American society, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How do you answer that then, Wendy?
I think comparing Hank Greenberg and Brad Ausmus are two different things. Clearly, in the era of Hank Greenberg, anti-Semitism was rampant, and Hank Greenberg experienced it frequently and often on the field and in the locker room. That's a very well-documented part of his life. But he became this tremendous hero to not only the Jewish community, but to kids who just fell in love with his humanism. And he was a first-generation child of an immigrant family and grew up playing ball and found that as his way to connect his passion and his professionalism to a sport and become a tremendous icon. Brad Ausmus is more, I would say, typical of kind of the more common theme in Judaism today, and that is that we don't necessarily wear that first. He wears his sport first as opposed to his Judaism first. Hank Greenberg had to wear his Judaism because he was so unique at the time. And the story of him going to high holiday services rather than playing ball, at the most critical time in the career or in the season, is iconic of the issues that were faced by the few Jewish players in the sport at that time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, of course, everybody associates Judaism, everybody, with Sandy Koufax not pitching on Yom Kippur.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that's part of the exhibit.
He is in the exhibit, and I'm afraid offhand I don't know the content that's written. That's part of the national narration, and we didn't focus that on in the local presentation. But it is on the panels, and is addressed nationally.
Mm-hmm. Do you know on the top of your head how many Jewish baseball players have played for Detroit?
No, I wish I did. I don't. Perhaps one of your listeners do.
Yes.
The community of baseball collectors and baseball trivia masters and baseball historians in the Detroit area is remarkable. And these guys are just brilliant. They know, and I have to say, it's mostly men that we've worked with. But it's just phenomenal, the recall and the knowledge these men have. They're walking encyclopedias. It's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. That would therefore me to ask, did you get anything from any of these phenomenal historians about, well, where's anything about so-and-so?
We opened the exhibit yesterday, last night, at a fundraiser we held at the museum, and everybody was overwhelmed and thrilled with what we presented in the exhibit. I don't think I've had any comments about why wasn't so-and-so included, because I think everyone was just taking it all in. And I'm sure that there are going to be lots of opportunities for people to add content. One of the things we did that I just love is we have a what we call a scrapbook. It's actually a simple three-ring binder, and we're adding pages to it as we get more articles or stories or pictures that we couldn't put in the exhibit. And this is a way that we can continue to collect and share those stories. So I imagine by the end of the exhibit closes on November 27th, I imagine by the end of that date, we will have filled that binder pretty well.
Oh, that's fascinating. Okay, so I am actually at the MichiganJewishHistory.org, MichiganJewishHistory.org, which is your website, looking at the things over here. I see you have several special things happening in conjunction with this, because, well,
yeah.
People missed the thing last night. Okay, good. So what else can they look forward to?
We can look forward to the museum. The Detroit Historical Museum is opened Wednesday through Sunday, and I think they have hours on Tuesdays. They are closed on Mondays. And the museum is free. So anybody can go and explore the exhibit, which is in the main gallery on the main floor, anytime they wish. If there are groups that would like to have a guided docent tour, we have trained a team of fabulous volunteers who are docents, and we are booking private tours. It's going to be a $5 per person charge, just because we will pay the museum a stipend for allowing groups to come through, and our own administration team for setting that up. But we are happy to book private tours.
Mm-hmm.
On a larger scale, we are doing an event on November 6th. We're calling Family Day. And we're still putting all the details together. Everything that day will be free. We will be selling kosher hot dog lunches. And we will have a variety of activities that are geared toward families of all ages to explore the exhibit, to participate in some kind of arcade games. We are going to be building a broadcast booth where younger and older children can come and pretend they're a baseball broadcaster.
Oh,
and
cool.
Call play-by-play. We're working with actually Channel 56 on that, which is an unusual partnership. And we heard yesterday that we're thrilled. The PJ Library has a new program called PJ Our Way, which is geared to 10 and 11-year-olds. They're going to be launching their first kind of public PJ Our Way event at our Family Day. And then the day will conclude with what is going to be a very fun segment we're calling Old Jews Talking Baseball. And we have three very proud old Jews, Max Lapidus, Bob Matthews, and Erwin Cohn, who are going to be on a panel and share some of this encyclopedic knowledge they have about baseball and baseball history and Jews in baseball. I think it's going to be a blast.
That sounds awesome.
The other event we have is on Thursday, October 27th. It's one of our, we have a series called NASHGEN. NASHGEN events are geared toward active adults who want experiential learning in a kind of a short time frame. So we have an hour of nashing and socializing, followed by a 45-minute program. And we're so excited that on that evening, we have Mike Stoney Stone from 97.1 The Ticket and Big Al Muscovitz, who are going to talk about some broadcasting moments in baseball and do some trivia as well.
Is that in association with Next Gen, the Federation?
Right. No, it's our event, and it's Noshgen, having something to eat.
Gotcha.
And we're deliberately playing on the words next gen, because this isn't next gen, this is the before gen. And so we always make sure we have really good food and some nice cold soft beverages and some wine and beer, and then we have a program of interest that is about a 45-minute program.
Right, and everything out there, I'm assuming, is kosher.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Awesome. You know, I have to tell you, since I was about 12 and my voice actually came down to about here, one of my things on my bucket list, which I have yet to do, is sing the Star Spangled Banner at a baseball game. So, but anyway, so
are you inviting yourself to try it out on October 27th at our NASHGEN event?
I was thinking maybe the broadcast booth. Yeah. So if you're inviting me to sing the Star Spangled Banner, well, maybe. So, but we'll keep it in mind. We'll stay in touch. Okay, our guest today has been Ms. Wendy Rose Bice, who's involved with the Michigan Jewish Historical Society. And it's ongoing now. Today, Sunday. They are open Sunday, so it's open today. Mm-hmm. And the hours again for the Detroit Historical Society, Wendy, 9 to 5?
10 to 5.
10 to 5.
On Sundays, yeah.
10 to 5. And during the week, from Wednesday through Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. We're not talking about Saturdays, but
I don't have that at hand.
Okay. So I said it's around the same time, 9 to 5, 10
the
to
Jewish,
5.
Just for your listeners, the Jewish Historical Society is I call us a building without walls, where we have an office in the Jewish Community Center, but everything we do is in the community. And our goal and our mission is to curate stories about Michigan's Jewish history and share those and bring them to life. So we have a fabulous mission, and that is to really explore how to get more people interested and educated about Michigan's Jewish history. Working with the museum is but one of many examples of how we do that.
Okay, cool. And if people want to go to your website, what is your website?
MICH, Jewish History.org.
Okay, that's great. That's going to do it. Well, thank you so much for coming on and enlightening us. And
thank you,
hopefully
Rabbi.
We'll see you in Detroit. Play ball.
We're going to listen to you sing.
Thank you so much. Thanks. Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Some things are better the way they used to be, like the crisp feel of a cool autumn day, the serenity of a baby sleeping, or the feeling of coming home after a long trip. Franklin Cider Mills makes cider the way cider is supposed to be. Its old-fashioned, clear, crisp taste reminds you of a cool autumn day. Located in the heart of historic Franklin Village at 14 Mile and Franklin Road, Franklin Cider Mill has been making cider the same way for over a century. Always fresh, with no additives or preservatives. You just can't buy Franklin Cider in any supermarket. Franklin Cider Mill is open from Labor Day weekend to after Thanksgiving from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Come visit Franklin Cider Mill. It's kind of like coming home.
Hey, Shul Finman, here you are listening to The Jewish Hour. Yeah, we got to Franklin Cider first week. It was awesome. Yeah, like what Finn kids say, everything else is just juice. Now, for your listening pleasure, this is brand new. Actually, it's not brand new. It's a remix, which means, for those who are not familiar with the jargon, that this artist made a song a while ago. And what he did was he re-released it in another arrangement and is calling it like a new song, but it's really the old song remixed. But so this is Yoni Z. He did a song a while back, I think maybe 2007, called Odeh, which means I thank you, God, for like everything. This one is done together with a guy who calls himself, his first name is Levi, and he calls himself Leviticus, which is really cute. Upon the word Leviticus. And so let's listen to the remix of Odeh. Thanks, God.
Yeah.
assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel Finman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. Up next, this is also brand new. This is Shuki, and he wrote a piece called Kulanu Rokdim. We're all dancing. Guess what this kind of song is?
כולם באים עכשיו הולך להיות שמח אני נושא תפילה לאלוקים לוקח מיקרופון מתחיל להיות כאן חם ולאוויר יש ריח שמשימה גדולה כל כך שלא תיתן לכם אישון
Someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox.
Herr Schulterman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. Next up, we have a request from somebody by the name of Franklin from El Paso, Texas, who listens to the show on RabbiFinman.com, who requested that we play Mordechai Gebirtuk's Shabbos Shabbos. So what we did was we looked around, and I was looking maybe since the song was written in 1936, maybe there were some like older recordings of it, some pre-World War II recordings, and there were, but they just didn't cut the mustard, however one cuts mustard, or even what cutting mustard means, because how does one cut mustard? But anyway, as the 1953 recording of Theodore Bekel, of blessed memory, doing Shabbos Shabbos. Ya ba 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 ya ba 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 Shabbos 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 soll sein Eden Shabbos Shabbos soll sein Shabbos soll sein Shabbos in der ganzen Welt Shabbos 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 soll sein Eden Shabbos, Shabbos, soll sein Shabbos, soll sein Shabbos in der ganzen Welt. Fionte, 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 soll sein Eden Jonte, Jonte, soll sein Jonte, soll sein Jonte für der ganzen Welt. Fionte, 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 soll sein Eden, Jonte, Jonte, soll sein Jonte, soll sein Jonte für der ganze Welt. Schulheim, 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 soll sein Eden, Schulheim, Schulheim. Sein Schulheim soll sein Schulheim auf der ganzen Welt. Schulheim, 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 Schulheim soll sein Eden, Schulheim. Schulheim soll sein Schulheim, soll sein Schulheim auf der ganzen Welt. Ba 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 Sein Schulheim soll sein Schulheim auf der ganzen Welt.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurances accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herr Schulterman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. This week is the portion of Ki Teitzei. It is to be found in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 21:10 and further. It begins with, it's a list of commandments. I'm not exactly sure how many there are, maybe close to 70 or so. Part of Moshe's review of the Torah before his passing, which includes a recapitulation and relearning about 500 of the 613 commandments. So this portion is just a list of commandments. The first thing it talks about is the war of annexation, which that in political correctness is considered not nice. You're going to go, just because you need space, you're going to go and fight a war for it? That's rather aggressive. That's imperialistic. But there's a provision there that when Israel would be finally too small for what they settled, because let's back up a half a second. The original borders of Israel were talked about in chapter 24 of the book of Exodus. And the Jews were told, you're not going to get the whole thing all at once. It's too much infrastructure to maintain. You're not going to be able to protect people from even wild animals, nevertheless marauding bands of robbers over that amount of space. So you're going to inhabit it as needed. So it's not that we're taking other people's lands. It's that we're taking our land. And indeed, King David felt the need for Israel getting a little tough, having lived in Israel some 300 years or so, that they needed to expand. And they did expand. And his motto was, until Damascus. And that whole area was annexed, the Golan Heights and passed. So that's now officially, biblically, Israel. At the very onset of the portion, when it says, Ki teitse lemilchama, when you go out to war, Rashi, the classic biblical commentary, says, B'milchamas harashus hakasav medaber. We're talking about this war of annexation. The last war that we're talking about, at the end of last week's portion, it was talking about what's called Milchamas Mitzvah, which is the conquest of Israel, for us to go in and get rid of the Canaanites and take over the land. This is now the next stage, and there's different rules involved with how to perpetrate such a war, and you can look over there, if you like, from chapter 21 on, is where it discusses all these rules of war, and Judaism, all is not fair in love and war. There are rules, and you have to abide by the rules, or you're doing the wrong thing. So it comes now this expression, which I'm going to zero in on, Milchamas HaRashus HaKasav Medaber, which would literally be translated, a war of the permissible, is what the verse is talking about. So what does that mean? Well, there are three categories of physical objects. There are the obligatory, there are the forbidden, and there are the permissible, the permitted. Those things which are obligatory, you have to do. Those things which are forbidden, you're never allowed to do. Those things that are permitted, you have to do properly. What do we mean properly? Well, I tell people, in America today, there are about 350,000 kosher certified products. That doesn't mean you have to eat them all. Just because you can doesn't mean you have to. And if you are, then you have to justify it. You have to come up with a reason, a rationale. Why am I engaged in this activity of doing whatever it is? Fill in the blank. And we've talked about it here on this station before, that sitting and doing nothing can be made into an act of holiness. Is there anything wrong, prohibited, about sitting on a couch and doing nothing? No, but it's permitted. You're allowed to sit on your couch, and you're allowed to do nothing. But you better have a good reason for sitting in there doing nothing. And if you can, then it becomes not only permitted, it becomes obligatory. It becomes a have to. It's creating a dwelling place for God. For example, if a person is sitting and doing nothing because they just really need this to quiet their own space, quiet their minds, let their blood pressure drop a couple of points so that they can go and attack the rest of what needs to be done this day. Because otherwise, what's going to happen if a person doesn't do that? They're going to be going, go, 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 go. They're going to fall flat on their face eventually. So even taking a break, if I'm taking the break for the purpose of, that's fine. That's a war, because it's very easy for a person to fool themselves. Yes, my classic example, chocolate brownies. Are chocolate brownies permitted? Well, to Jews, if they're kosher, they're permitted. But why am I eating this chocolate brownie? People have asked me, why is it that I always use the example chocolate brownies? And I'll share a little insight in there. When I was a teenager, and if you asked me back then, I was probably the smartest teenager you had ever met and will ever have met in your life. I used to, I had a friend who was actually my mother's downstairs Nick, as we called them. Ben, can you guess what the Yiddish word downstairs Nick means?
I mean, it just sounds like you'd go into a basement somewhere.
Yeah, the guy downstairs. Okay, they don't have this thing called two-story houses so much here in Detroit, but my mother lived on the second floor and this family lived on the first floor. So they were referred to as the downstairs Nick. So this downstairs Nick, what would happen is I would come home on Friday and we would sit and he'd be like finishing his Friday night Sabbath meal. And his wife made these chocolate walnut brownies and peppermint tea. And I'm talking 1975. Who knew about peppermint tea in 1975? Ben, you did not know about peppermint tea in 1975. No,
I didn't know anything about peppermint tea.
Yes, see. But so this was like really awesome. We would sit and we'd talk philosophy till 2 in the morning. We did that every Friday for, oh, a couple of years until finally I said, okay, I got it. And here I am today, Rabbi Finman. So in that instance, we see that the chocolate brownies was now a vehicle for something godly. What really attracted me? I enjoyed the philosophy, really, I did. But really, what got me coming back was the brownies. Absolutely 100%. So there, in that instance, we see that the brownies have served a holy purpose. This then becomes a war, because I see a brownie. You walk in, how many times have you walked into a bakery and walked out with just a loaf of bread? The expression in the Talmud, and the eyes see, the heart wants, and, you know, it's you can have it, but got to have a reason why. Now, in this portion, along this vein, because things are put into portions, have a similar theme to them. There's one of my favorite mitzvahs. Everybody should have a favorite mitzvah. There's 613 to choose from. Go take a look at them and see which one catches your fancy. This is a mitzvah, actually, I have never done, and I don't expect to ever do. And between you and me, I'm really not really interested in doing it, but I like talking about it. And that is, when a soldier goes to war, whatever the reason may be, that's why I don't want to do it. I'm not interested in going to war. Included in their pack, in their supplies, has to be a shovel. Why is it that, and the Torah spells this out, why is it that the Torah demands that every soldier has a shovel? It says quite clearly, to cover over what you left behind. How many armies over the millennia have been decimated, not by the other forces, but by the fact that they were going to the bathroom in their drinking water? So here it is, the Torah comes and tells us that you have to have, all of your dirt has to be covered, and it has the Tiye Machanecha Kadosh, and your camp has to be holy. This is not just for somebody going to war. Oh, no, this really doesn't. The Torah understands, listen, you're going to have schmutz. There's going to be those mess-ups. And you know what? You know what you have to do with those mess-ups? You have to bury them. You have to jettison them. Because your camp has to be holy.
And how is that going to be? Well, we're in the month of Elul, prior to Rosh Hashanah. One of the major ways that's mentioned in preparing for Rosh Hashanah is to do tshuva. I've said many times, erroneously translated as repentance, tshuva means to come back to God. A person, however close they may or may not have been, can always get closer to God. And the closer one gets to God through the other means of increasing in prayer and increasing in learning and increasing in charity and increasing in other acts of kindness to other people and doing good, and stopping doing wrong things, this brings a person closer to God. And then they are Machanech HaKadosh. They are living in a holy camp. We have to take a quick commercial break, and we will be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Why go anywhere else when you could go to One Stop Kosher? Located on Greenfield Road, just south of 696, you're never far from One Stop Kosher. At One Stop Kosher, you'll find the largest selection of kosher wines in Michigan. One Stop Kosher has the freshest produce, the best dairy, deli, and meats. They're gourmet. They even have a kosher bakery right on the premise. It's One Stop Kosher on Greenfield Road in 696 for all your shopping needs.
Hi, this is Specs Howard from the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for the Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Herschel Finman, here you are listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? The easiest way? RabbiFinman.com. What will you find at RabbiFinman.com? Right on the homepage to contact us. We put it right there. You contact me, I contact you. Best friends for life. Yep. You'll also find archived editions of the show. We've got about a year's shows up there now. You could listen to your heart's content. And they're all very easy with the player. You can move it back and forth. If you want to do only the interviews, you could do that. If you want to do only the music, you could do that. If you want to do only my monologue, thank you very much. You could listen to 52 episodes of The Jewish Hour Monologue, telling about the insights into the portion or the holiday. It's all there. You'll also find archived editions of the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, Hasidic U-Story. These are missives that are conveyed in an educational, hopefully entertaining way in print and video. Also, you'll find there's a classes page. We're getting just about done. A couple more weeks, we will be done with the Tanya. The whole thing will be up on the classes page. And, of course, the very important donations page. We made a promise that if we could pay off July, August, and September, before the end of September, we wouldn't talk about raising funds anymore. We are just about to pay off July. We're just like another little more push for July, and we can stop talking about July. But that still leaves August and September. But if you'd like to hear a longer story, which is what's really happening now, is I don't have the ability to tell a longer story because the Jewish Hour has been on air 20 years and has always relied on listeners like yourself to go to RabbiFinman.com and click on any button that fits you. We've got these wonderful buttons, and it goes through PayPal. It's all very safe, secure, easy. You can make it such. Now PayPal is a wonderful organization. You can click this, make this a monthly contribution, and you don't have to worry about it anymore. And it could even be as little as $5. And we appreciate the $5 at $60 a year. We appreciate the people who are doing $50 a year. It's a wonderful thing, $50 a month. It's a wonderful thing. Thank you so much. We need your help. Don't like doing internet giving? I understand that. I would say what you should do then, just my personal advice, is to drop your contribution into an envelope and mail it to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Story today involves one rabbi by the name of Moshe Leib Sassover.
He was prominent in the mid-1800s, lived in the city of Sasov, which is located many miles east of Grosse Pointe Farms. He was known as being exceedingly pious and for doing tremendous acts of love and kindness for his fellow Jews. So what's happened? A poor woman came to his door. And as soon as she was allowed into his office, she just broke down crying bitter tears, weeping uncontrollably. So she finally, through her sobs, asked the Rebbe, "I beg you, Rebbe, please, my daughter is very sick. Give me a blessing that she should get better." So the rabbi, Rabbi Moshe Leib, said Hashem should send her a quick and speedy and complete recovery. The woman was not happy with this. She said, "No." She said, "You must promise. You have to swear to me that my daughter will recover. In fact, I want you to swear on the portion that you will receive that Mashiach is coming, that when Mashiach comes, that you're not going to get that portion if my daughter doesn't get better." And without hesitating, this is a very interesting thing, without hesitating, Reb Moshe Leib said, "I swear on my portion in the world to come when Mashiach comes that God will cure her and she will recover fully." The woman broke into a smile. She was very happy. She left and like all her cares were gone. So the people that were standing watching this whole business were astounded. They said, "Rebbe, her daughter is very sick. The daughter might not survive. How could you make such a promise?" So he said, "What else could I have done? The tears of a Jewish mother are more precious to me than the entire world to come. If my swearing on my future world, in the world of future reward, in the world of truth, was necessary to stop her from crying, then it's worth it all to me than to lose my portion in the world to come." As it happens, postscript, the daughter did get better. That's going to do it. Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have such a wonderful week this week. Drop me a line, rabbifinman.com. Let me hear about it. And we hope to see you again next week. Take care.